Good.
No sentence.
So today we're going to learn about how we came down into the land of Egypt, as we set the stage for what would later become Golus Mitzrayim, the exile that gave way to the Geula. In the fifth reading of Parshas Vayigash, the Torah discusses who came down. We get a detailed listing. And at the end of the detailed listing of who came down together with Yaakov to the land of Mitzrayim, chapter 46, verse 26, we have a final roundup. The conclusion of the fifth reading, Kol HaNefesh, Haba'ah, all of the souls who were coming, LeYaakov, that were to Jacob, Mitzrayimah, into Egypt, Yoytze, Yerech Yankev, those who, so to speak, had come forth from Yaakov. We'll talk about that in a moment, what exactly that means. Milvad Nishei B'nei Yaakov. This is aside for the wives of Yaakov. So not that your daughter-in-laws aren't part of your family, but they're not your actual biological children. So speaking about the children who are biologically Yaakov's, Kol Nefesh Shishim V'sheish, all the souls numbered 66. Uvnei Yosef, Asher Yulad Lo B'Mitzrayim, and the children of Yosef who had been born in the land of Mitzrayim, Nefesh Shnoyim, two souls, Kol HaNefesh LeBeis Yaakov Abba Mitzrayimah Shivim, all the souls who come to the house of Yaakov, from the house of Yaakov, are 70. So this, of course, is going to require some elucidation. Let's take it from the top. Kol HaNefesh Habo LeYaakov, all the souls who are coming to Yaakov. Let's take a look in Rashi, verse 26. All of these people trace their lineage, right? They are direct descendants, so to speak. Sheyatzu me'eretz Kanaan, that left the land of Canaan, Lovoi l'Mitzrayim, to come to the land of Egypt. So if you count it up, you end up with 66. Now, Rashi is going to add some commentary or elucidation to the word ba'a. And he explains to us that the word ba'a can be understood in two ways. It could mean what we would call past tense, came in English, or it could be in a dynamic present sense, as in coming. So which is this? When it says all of the souls, should it be all the souls who came, or should it be the souls coming down into the land of Egypt? Says Rashi, Ve'ein habazu loshen ovar. It doesn't say the souls who came. This is not a documentation of history telling us what happened past ipso facto. Elo rather, here the Bible speaks to us l'shoyin hoive. The Bible speaks to us in the present tense. For example, where else do we have the word bo, which typically would be understood in past tense, and yet here it should be understood in the dynamic and present sense? So Rashi says, take a look in the book of Esther, in the second chapter, verse 14, that it says, it speaks about this very strange monarch, but then again, maybe very typical monarch. I mean, was a massive womanizer, and he needed to choose a new queen, because he decided to kill the last one, because she didn't jump as high as he wanted in a state of disrobement. So what did he do? He said, okay, bring all the beauties. Bring him in. Let me see. I'll choose. So what happened was, the Megillah describes that she would come in the evening and leave in the morning. If the king would call for her a second time, then she'd know she won the jackpot. Nobody won the jackpot until Esther came along. But it says, Be'erev hi ba'a. So over there, it's the description of a dynamic reality. Here's what was ongoing. She would come in the evening. She would leave in the morning. You cannot say that over there, ba is past tense. She came in the evening and left in the morning. Because if you read the syntax, it's clear that we're speaking about a dynamic situation. When the Megillah describes it, it's still an ongoing. Mm-hmm. what we call a happening reality. So that gives you, that's the first example. Now, interestingly, Rashi reaches all the way across biblical texts, and he lands in the book of Esther, which is like outside even of the Nevi'im and the Ksuvim, in order to demonstrate to you his point. The next thing he does is reach very close for something we read a few weeks ago. Uchamai v'hini Rachel ba'oy matzayin. Rachel is coming with the sheep, instead of Rachel came with the sheep. Why does Rashi do that? So it seems to me the reason is that in Megillas Esther, it's clearly speaking about something dynamic. Whereas with regard to Rachel, it's not so clear. It has to be clarified. In fact, Rashi there clarifies. This is earlier in chapter 29 in this very book. Rashi clarifies Rachel ba'ah, Rachel is coming, rather than Rachel has just come or came. So therefore, Rashi brings the more obvious, brings you an example of biblical syntax which cannot mean past tense. And then he demonstrates to you how recently in the very Chumash we're studying, we had an example of ba'ah being dynamic.
But why wouldn't Torah just choose the word habayim, which would be much more clear? Like why even go to that
length? You know, you asked the question, why don't you take a look at this verse and put the word habayim and see if it'll fit? Kol ha-nefesh habayim li-Yakov?
Yeah.
It doesn't fit.
No.
No. Why? Because here we emphasize the fact that they're progeny. Bo'im li-Yakov would be coming to Yaakov. The Torah wants to emphasize not how many people came in the caravan, but how many people of this caravan were descended from Yaakov. Did he have daughters-in-law?
Oh, I see.
Yes. Why aren't they mentioned? Understand? Mm-hmm. You cannot say because women are mentioned. Dina is mentioned. Lefichach, mm-hmm. Therefore, ta'amoi lamata ba'alef. That's why the, so to speak, the emphasis in the way the word is read is on the aleph. But if it would have been in the past tense, it would have been on the beis. So the word ba in Hebrew, beis aleph, means come, or could mean came. So it depends what you emphasize. If you emphasize the beis, it's past tense. If you emphasize the end of the word, haba'ah, then it means dynamic. Now Rashi continues to explain lafi, Shekishayatsu, Lovai, that's Canaan. When they left home, leaving the land of Canaan, Lehoya Elas Shishim Vishesh. When they left to come from Me'eretz, from the land of Canaan, they were only 66. And here, 36? Huh? 36? No. 66. Now the Hasheni, the next verse, verse 2, which is actually verse 27 in this particular set up. The next one says, Kol ha-nefesh le-beis Yaakov haba mitzrayma shivim. Here we speak of 66, but when the Torah gives us the actual final number, it gives us the number 70. So, I mean, verse 26 and verse 27 almost seem to contradict each other. Verse 26 says, all the souls that for Yaakov are 66. Verse 27 suddenly says, Kol ha-nefesh le-beis Yaakov haba mitzrayma shivim. Which one is it? So Rashi explains. The Kol ha-nefesh le-beis Yaakov haba mitzrayma shivim means hu lashon avar. That is past tense. Because the children of Yosef were not coming into the land of Egypt. They were born there. They were there already. Yeah. So we can only be speaking then about something that was already. And if you take a look at the way the word ba is vowelized, Kol ha-nefesh haba Yaakov. And here we say the word nefesh haba'ah, you'll see that the emphasis is on a different thing. You'll see that the targ, the timim, the way we sing the word, you see there's the one is placed on top of the aleph, and the other is placed underneath the beis. So that depends what you emphasize. In general, when it comes to Hebrew, sing-song is a very important part of communication. In every language, inflection is important. In Hebrew or Yiddish, when Jews do it, it's ever so much more so. You know, like that famous story of the guy who said Yankel. You know Yankel. He said Yankel is a ganef. So the man came to the rabbi. He said, Rabbi, he called me as being a ganef. Rabbi said, that's terrible. And he called in. He says, Moshe, you said Yankel's a ganef? He said, I sure did. He says, what? You have proof? He says, proof? Everybody knows that ganef. He's a bavusta ganef. He's a well-known ganef. The rabbi said, that's not good enough. That's lashon hara, that's rechilus, that's defamation. You are going to ascend the pulpit before I speak on Shabbos and announce to everybody, Yankel is not a ganef. Man said, okay, if that's what you say, rabbi, but I'm telling you he's a ganef. And you better count your fingers when you finish talking to him. Rabbi said, I don't want to hear that. And I said, lashon hara, I've spoken. All right, fine. Comes Shabbos, the whole shul is a buzz, something big is going to happen. Moshe goes up to the bima before the rabbi, he patches on the bima, everybody's quiet. He says, my friends, Yankel is not a ganef. Yeah. And with this, he sits down. Say, hi, that's how you sing it. You know, like, and therefore, the question is, how do you sing? How do you sing the vowelization of Kol Nefesh Haba? Or Kol Nefesh, Leves Yaakov Haba? That's the difference.
So you elongate the letter.
You emphasize a different part of the word. Yeah, that's the point. Yosef and his children were already there.
So 66.
Point in case.
69.
Okay, so now, Lafi, because Rashi is going to make us the calculation now. Once they arrived, how many were they then? Once they arrived, there were 70. Why? Yosef had two children. Matzu Sham Yosef Shnei Banav. They found Joseph and his two children. Astat doesn't count over here. V'nos Netosfa Lahem Yocheved. He said it's only 69. 66 plus 3. You don't have to be an accountant to know that 69. Right? How do we reconcile this? Rashi says, here we have a beautiful medrash that tells us that Yocheved was born Bein HaChomot. She was born in customs. The Jewish people arrived in Mitzrayim and made a big splash. As they came, Levi's wife was busy going into labor, or busy delivering a baby. Mamash in customs. You got to picture this, okay? This family of Jews in customs. Imagine the Canadian officials are all standing there like that. Everybody's screaming and yelling, and they got a lady on a stretcher. And the next thing they know, I hear a baby crying. Everybody's screaming, Mazel Tov, Mazel Tov. And that's how they stamp their passports, and they go into the country. This works out well according to one opinion, one school of thought, that the Shvatim married Canaanite women and converted them. But according to the opinion that the Shvatim actually married women who had come from Yaakov, because there was a whole bunch of Yaakov's children that are not mentioned. And they are, twins. That the Shvatim had twins born with them. And they married their sisters. So how do we work that out?
So why wouldn't they be mentioned?
Why wouldn't they? Exactly. So Tzichum and Oleima, we would have to say, Shemesu, we have to say that they already died. We have to say they died. Otherwise, it doesn't add up. So if you're going to say, Yaakov's wives are not mentioned, okay, they're not his progeny. But if the wives of the Shvatim were his progeny, and there is such a school of thought, how does that work out? Why are they not mentioned? So Rashi would say, the answer must be that they weren't alive anymore. Now we know that Yaakov's wife Bilhah was alive. So you can't say Yaakov's wife was not alive. That's what they're not mentioned, because we know for a fact that Bilhah was alive. That was the dream. Bilhah was going to bow to Yosef, and she does. So it has to be L'meisu l'fnei yiridas l'mitzayim shaharei lo nimnu kan. Now Rashi chooses this very unusual medrash of emphasizing that Yocheved made the number 70. So by the way, for those who say, look at the chauvinistic Torah, doesn't mention the woman, only mentions the men. Yeah, that's funny. But it turns out, how did they get to the number 70? Because of a girl that was a few minutes old. Yocheved is a woman. She's the mother of Moshe.
Leah had already also passed away?
Yeah, Leah had already passed away.
Okay, because the Torah doesn't mention, right?
The Torah does not speak of the passing of Leah. The Torah does not speak of the passing of Bilhah Zilpah. No.
Zippo, okay, that could make sense, but Leah is one of the
Imhalot. Leah's passing is not mentioned. We know that she's buried in Marat HaMapela, but her passing is not mentioned. Mm-hmm. So here's the interesting question: does everybody accept that notion that it was Yocheved who completed the number 70? And the answer is not everybody accepts it. So how do you work out 70? So the Ibn Ezra very elegantly suggests that the Torah uses round off numbers. No, he says, how many lashes do you get if you do an Aveira?
39.
Yeah, the Torah says, Arboim Yakenu. You get 40. How many days do we count to get the Shavuot? 49. Yeah, we use 49. But yet, when we but yet we say 50th day. So there are other answers to these questions, by the way. There are other reasons why we say 40 and stop at 39. One answer is because you're not allowed to give an extra stripe. And therefore the Torah says we're never going to give more than 40. No, we'll never give more than 40. Never even give 40. And you know why it's called 50? It's a famous answer, because we have to count 49. We do 7 weeks. And then the 50th automatically is sanctified. But Ibn Ezra says on a very simple level, there doesn't have to be a question. People round things off to the lowest, to the common decimal. Right? So 69 becomes 70.
But a soul.
Huh?
A soul. Something as important as a soul.
You see, Rashi doesn't follow that. Now, interestingly, even Ezra himself is not so comfortable with saying it. He says, that's one way to say it. Don't think of it as a soul, think of it as population. Population numbers are oftentimes rounded off, you know. They'll give you an approximation of a number. If it was one off from the end of one of the tens, it just ended off like that.
That's not satisfying.
Okay, no problem.
It's really not. Especially so few numbers.
I wanted to share with you. I didn't say you have to be satisfied. I didn't say you don't have to eat it. Okay? I told you what Rashi said. Incidentally, Ibn Ezra does quote the same medrash as Rashi also in explaining this. So that's the business of the 70 souls who came down into Mitzrayim. Now Rashi finishes off. He says, Mitzosi, b'vayikra rabba, I found in the medrash, Esav, sheish nefashas hayoli. Esau, at the point when the Torah is talking about him, has only 6 souls under his belt, so to speak. And only 6 members of his family who are his direct progeny. This is earlier in chapter 36. And nonetheless, it says, Nafshais Beisai, plural, the souls of his family. Lashon Rabbim. And here it says, Nefesh, singular. Why? Why is the grammar? Either you speak about soul, 70 soul, where you say, so Rashi says something very beautiful. He says, because they worship many gods and many deities, and they were not on the same page when it came to spiritual pursuit. However, Yaakov, 70 souls, and yet, nefesh, the Torah calls it the soul of the Jewish people. Why? Because Yaakov had no diversity in his family. Observant Jews, idolaters, agnostics, not in the family of Yaakov. In the family of Yaakov, the foundation of the Jewish people was rock solid. Everybody believed in Hashem. And that's what the Torah says, nefesh. You serve Hashem with your soul, so to speak. We have a soul connection. And all souls were united in the bond with God. So that's why we have the singular expression.
Is there any connection between this and 70 nations that we often refer
there
to?
There is certainly a connection. There is a connection. It is brought down in a number of places that the 70 souls of the Jewish people correspond to 70 nations. This gives us an idea of the oversized responsibility that we carry. Every one of us can influence an entire nation.
Is a particular soul linked to a particular nation as well?
It's a good question. And on some level, the answer would be yes. But exactly how that works out is beyond the pale of our conversation this morning. Okay, so now we know how it's 70 souls. Yosef is in Egypt, his children, and Yocheved being born in Mitzrayim. And that's how we have a sum total of 70. And the sixth reading begins with their arrival in Mitzrayim. Besides having a baby at customs, yes, Yehuda Shalach Lofanov. Yaakov Avinu deputizes Yehuda to lead the nation into the land of Egypt. He sends him before him, El Yosef to Yosef, Lahodis Lofanov Goshna, to make sure that he can direct them into Goshen. Vayavoyu Arzo Goshen. They came to the land of Goshen. Now, you must be asking, what in heaven is going on here? What does this mean? What exactly was Yehuda doing? Did Yosef not monitor the situation? Does he not have royal runners who would come and tell him when his father's coming so he would come to greet him himself? I mean, come on, this doesn't make any sense. So Rashi says, Lahiris Lofanov, what does that mean? You could understand it kitargumo, the way the Targum renders it. Lefanoisli. Literally, the word Lefano means to clear out a space. It's a mess, it's chaos, clear out a space for me. Go, you send somebody expeditionary force, clear out the area. So lefanos, he says, lemakim, to clear out a space. Ulehoyres, and to direct, heich yisyashivba, how exactly will they settle in? Lefanov, this job that Yehuda got was before him, meaning koydim shiagil l'sham, before they would reach there. Umedr shagada, here Rashi says we really require agadic assistance. So what does that mean? Yosef couldn't prepare an apartment. You also couldn't make sure there were enough beds for everybody. There would be a little bit of club soda on the table and a piece of fruit to welcome them. like, what does this mean? Anyway, Yosef comes to greet them. So Rashi says, L'hoides l'fanov means l'takinlay based Talmud, to appropriate and set aside, fix, if you will. Nothing's broken, but fixing means to perfect or to arrange a place of Torah study. Shemisham Teitzahira, the first thing the Jewish people have before they know where they're going to live, they know where the yeshiva is. That's the first thing that happens. When the Friedrich Rebbe came to the United States of America on the ninth day of Adar, 1940, he called for a number of yeshiva students. My Zayde Hecht, my maternal Zayde, was one of those 10 students, one of the minyan of Bachram, who entered the Friedrich Rebbe's hotel room in the Greystone Hotel. And he said to them, Heint kumich, today I arrive, Heint grindich a yeshiva. Today I establish a yeshiva. He said to them, this will be a different kind of yeshiva. There were some yeshiva out in America. This will be different, it will be a Hasidic yeshiva. He said, in this yeshiva, the Bachram will wear beards. And if people will stare at you, he said, that's what I heard from my grandfather. If people will stare at you, he said, you will look at them as if they are bricks in the wall. In other words, the basis of this yeshiva will be no hanging your head in shame. It will be no self-conscious, not being self-conscious about who you are. This is who we are. If it doesn't, you don't like it, can't help you. This is who we are. That's the way this yeshiva is going to run. In other words, he didn't know where he was going to live yet. He didn't know any details. But the first thing he needed to do was establish a yeshiva. So the first thing we're going to do is establishing a yeshiva today. Yaakov Avinu wants to come to Mitzrayim, is already a yeshiva in place. If the students aren't sitting and studying, at least there's already a location that's been arranged. And that's what he appoints Yehuda to do. So really, comes out like this. Rashi, according to Onkelos, explains the word lahoyrois as to empty the space. What is empty space needed for? So you can fill it. In other words, that when the people come, they'll know exactly where they have to go. Rashi himself, though, is not satisfied using Unkelos' interpretation alone. He says there's something missing here. I mean, after all, it's important to know where you're going to live, but not that important. So he says there's another interpretation. And then Rashi, in his secondary explanation, leans on the Medrash. And he says, this is not just where you live, which pillow you'll put your head down on, but rather, l'takin le'beis Talmud, we speak here of fixing, of establishing, of preparing a yeshiva. So why is Yehuda chosen? Rabbeinu Bechaya says, clearly, Yehuda was the most capable. Who took care of them last time? Yehuda. Clearly, he was the leader. Yaakov did what was practical. Now, Abar Benel takes this at a very literal level. He says he sent Yehuda before him to tell Yosef, hey, Yosef, I'm almost here. Come greet your dad. However, Rashi doesn't follow that approach because, I mean, I think, Yosef would certainly have been monitoring the situation. There were sentries. There was advanced information. Egypt was a very, very highly sophisticated and carefully guarded country. Remember, all the food is there. All the wealth in the world is coming there. We think they're just going to leave this as open for surprise attack. So in that case, Yosef had a natural infrastructure of a way to know when his father was coming. Yosef wouldn't come. Does Yaakov really think that he would come there? And Yosef would come 3 days later. Oh, Dad, you're in town. So nice to see you. Sorry, I was busy with affairs of state. I couldn't come and say hi. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. The prime minister comes to our country. Who's there at the plane to greet him? The prime minister. The foreign minister comes to a country. Who's there to greet him? The foreign minister. That's always the way it is. And when Yosef's father's going to come, he'll treat him like a king. There's no question he himself is going to go out there. The Pharaoh doesn't go, but Yosef sure is going to go. It's not even a question. So this is the story of the expeditionary Egyptian force. And that's what Yehuda does. So what's the big question? We're still left with one very big question. Even the Rashi quotes the Agadic interpretation, even though he gives us the idea that this was about Yehuda being capable and needed a yeshiva, and it's not just where he's going to live. What's the big question we haven't yet answered?
What is the big question?
Yeah, what is the big question?
The big question.
The big question, the $10 million question.
Why wouldn't he entrust Yosef to do it?
Yeah. Why wouldn't he trust Yosef?
Yeah.
Yehuda's capable. Yosef's a little more capable, at this point at least. He commands an army. He's the commander in chief of Egypt. He can do whatever he wants. Yehuda's coming into a foreign country. He doesn't really speak the language. He's a greener, as they say.
He hasn't lived with his father in decades.
Yosef's message was that he sent him agalot, he sent him the wagons to remember, to remind him that he was still studying Torah, and he remembered the last Torah lesson they had together about Egla Arufa. Yosef was a
there's no question.
The Torah Jew, the tzaddik. Yaakov does. It's Yehuda Shalach Lefanov. Lefanov before Yaakov. So page Dalad Shin, which is 304. Simich of Gimel. Rebbe says, Yesh Lahavin, L'shem Ma Hoye Yaakov Tzarech L'shleiches Yehuda. Why was Jacob sending Yehuda? Babisho, She Yosef Hoye Manigo Tzarech Mitzrayim. Yosef is the leader of the entire country. If Yosef is the leader of the entire country and he can do as he pleases, you need preparations, just tell Yosef. He'll get it done. In fact, Yosef said that. He said, don't come with your things. Leave your furniture home. I'll take care of you. I got everything for you. This was incidentally, this is the last time that Rebbe spoke about Parshat Vayigash. A few weeks after this, Sicha, Rebbe had the stroke. This was the final, Rebbe's final parting shot, if you will. This is the last thing he told us about Parshat Vayigash. Listen to this. He said, the explanation to that question is, when Yehuda is sent to Mitzrayim, what Yaakov seeks to emphasize is that even when a Yid is in Golos, the truth is, a Yid is above Golos. Even when a Yid is in Golos, the Galut is not defining. Ve'ein niton klal, l'shlitaso. A Yid is never under the full sway, the full force of Golos. Like the Maharal of Prague famously teaches, that once we left Mitzrayim, nobody can ever put us back. They can subjugate us superficially, but the spirit of a Yid is free. These are the words that the Friedik Rebbe very, very bravely and courageously said after being released from Soviet incarceration, when everything was crawling with KGB informants. Hasidim came to see the Rebbe for the last time. They thought they might never see him again, and most never did. And what did he say to them? He said the words of his father, the words of the Rebbe Shabbat uttered, that the guf, the body, goes into Golos, the neshama is not in Golos. Nobody is balabas, he said, on the Yiddish neshama, on the soul. They can only control the body. Lachain lo yistapek yankiv bekach. Therefore, Yaakov didn't say she Yosef yochin es hamokim li shivasim shel bnei Yisrael. Yaakov wasn't satisfied that Yosef would prepare a place for them to live. Of course, Yosef would prepare a place for them to live, but he couldn't have him establish the yeshiva. Why? Shehari Yosef hayachelik mehashilton hamitzri. Yosef is part of the exilic apparatus. He's part of the system. The system of Golos is Mitzrayim, and Yosef is part of that. He is a shilton. He has indeed dominion. He has power. However, that power is legislated al yedei pare, through the Pharaoh. V'gam le'achrei minui, and even after he is appointed as viceroy, as we learned last week, hayakof of the pare, he's still subjugated. Sure, he kept Yiddishkeit himself, but if he establishes the yeshiva, who runs the yeshiva? The Egyptian government is running the yeshiva. Right, the Pharaoh said, Hakisa Egdal, remember, the throne towers above you. He's not the one who is going to secure the future of the Jewish people. He cannot be the one to ensure independence of the Jewish people. Why? Yehuda here represents the Yiddish strength, the Jewish courage, he becomes iconic of the force of our spirit. That no nations can dominate that force. Something which expresses itself in the behavior and in the words of Yosef himself. When Yosef wants to take Binyamin, and how the parasha opens, what does Yehuda say? Yehuda comes with tremendous force and says, absolutely not. This you will not accomplish. A Jewish child you will not take from me. Toikev zeh, it's this strength, who shehevi lekach, that brought shebevoyim, shal yankev, the bond of Mitzrayim, that when Jacob and his family came to Mitzrayim, what were they able to do? They were able to succeed in an incredible way. It says, vayaoksuba, they grasped hold of the land, vayifru, vayirbu ma'oid. They proliferated at an incredible rate. Kashi Yehuda eini mischashev ba'agbolos ha'golos, when the Yid does not take into calculation the limitations that exile imposes when it comes to Yiddishkeit. V'aymid b'teikif al yahadusa, he says, this is the way a Yid has to behave, and I will bow my head to no one. B'seif shel davar, in the end, whom is gabed al kshi agolos, he is able to overcome the pain, the anguish, the difficulty, the pressures of golos. V'af shelet b'golos atzman, in the end, he calls the shots, not the other way around. And indeed, that has been our story over history. We end up being the victors. You see that picture that was shared on Facebook at Brandenburg Gate?
Yeah.
A big menorah at Brandenburg Gate. Mm-hmm. You know, that famous iconic picture of the menorah in the window with a swastika across the street? A colleague of mine who has a Chabados now, just across from the apartment where Hitler and Machshema and Zichro lived, and the menorahs live in the window facing it. That, my dear friends, is the message of Hanukkah. That is the dominance and the force of spirit. That is defining for Am Yisrael. And therefore, since the yeshiva defines us, and since our strength comes from study of Torah, not from guns or tanks, therefore, we have to be certain and make sure that the furnace, the engine, is in place. The engine, that's the yeshiva. And that can't be, even though Yosef's a tzaddik, but he still represents the system. That can't come from within the golos, that has to come from without it, to be able to fully transcend it. And that, my friends, is the lesson we learn from Yehuda's expeditionary message and force. It's from his special mission in those days, teaches us volumes about how we must behave today.
That ties into what he left in the